Morning Show at East Coast at 087-77-11-103. Former Minister for Defence and Justice, Alan Chatter, is here. Good morning to you, Alan. Nice to talk to you. This is the first time I think we actually met, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Though I've heard you occasionally as I drive through Wicklow.
You're enjoying Wicklow this morning anyway with the nice weather.
Incredibly beautiful day. Hopefully it stays that way. The rain yesterday was horrendous.
Indeed. Anyway, on the 6th of May 2014, two reports. It said wrongly condemning the conduct of Alan Chatter, Minister for Justice, Equality and Defence, were delivered to government buildings in Dublin. Pressurised by Taoiseach Enda Kenny, Chatter resigned from the cabinet the next day, his reputation and political career in tatters. His new book is Frenzy and Betrayal, and it tells the story from Alan's point of view. Is that characterization correct?
Well, it doesn't tell it from my point of view. It truthfully details very complex and unprecedented events that took place in 2014. They all involved Garda-related controversies. There was a very simplistic presentation of what was occurring at the time, and I was depicted by both opposition politicians and the media as the villain of the piece. It took a number of years for clarity to be brought to what occurred. Most people who were interested in these issues understandably get their politics from what they read in the newspapers or hear across the airwaves or watch on TV. The story was always a great deal more complex than was presented. It turned out, as we went through the years that followed, that the allegations made against me, those which resulted in my resignation, were found by independent commissions of investigation to be entirely untrue. My version of events was found to be correct, and I was found to have dealt appropriately with these issues. I thought, because of the nature of what occurred, it was important that we had an accurate chronological account of events. And for those who were truly interested in politics, those who were interested in events around allegations that the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission was under surveillance, which were untrue, there were allegations it was. Those who were interested in the events relating to Sergeant Maurice McCabe, events relating to the recording of telephone conversations in Garda stations, the public's perspective is from the outside looking in. And I thought it was important to describe what occurred from the inside looking out. So what this book tries to do is set out what happened within government at the time, what was happening in the Dáil, what allegations were being made, what the media was saying about it all, and how it all turned out to be very different in the context of what was subsequently independently established in a variety of inquiries and commissions of investigation.
Right, you left after the Guerin report and they went back on that and exonerated.
Well, the Guerin report was a strange event. There were valid issues raised by Maurice McCabe about Garda failures, and there were some issues he raised which were mistaken and allegations made which were found to be unsubstantiated later on. But Mr. Guerin was appointed as a senior counsel at a time of great controversy by the government. I was a member of the government that appointed him to do a plenary inquiry. And his preliminary inquiry was to simply identify were the genuine issues that required greater investigation and examination. He had no role to adjudicate on anybody or condemn anybody. I found myself in the strange situation as Minister for Justice that his report suddenly appeared a great deal earlier than was anticipated. In my view, he rushed to judgment. And much to my shock and surprise, he condemned me. And he appeared to affirm or confirm a false narrative that I had ignored Maurice McCabe's concerns. It took 2 years until the O'Higgins Commission report to establish that was completely untrue.
Do you think anybody remembers that, and is that the purpose of the book?
I'm sure nobody remembers the detail of this, and I wouldn't expect them to. But the central issue around it was effectively I was condemned wrongly without any hearing, without any engagement. Hugely important in this country that we protect various values and principles that ensure we have a truly democratic state. The rule of law is important. It's important that people aren't condemned without a hearing. It's important that we observe due process. It's important that no individual can have their reputation arbitrarily destroyed. So this book isn't simply about the events I was involved in. They're about how government operates. It's about the dysfunctional relationship between politics and the truth, the odd relationship between politics and the media, and how false narratives can be given an enormous amount of public credence because the public isn't told the full story, nor are they made aware of the complexity.
Well, stepping back from the facts, do you feel in some ways you come over as somebody scorned?
No, I the book was to set the record straight and to set out...
Do you think people care at this stage?
Well, I've no doubt people care because these were very dramatic events which impacted on government in an enormous way. They impacted on politics and their events. The book comes up to very recent and current events. It was only in the late autumn of last year that we had the Disclosures Tribunal of Joe Charlton, again dealing with a variety of Garda-related issues, some... issues of a very serious nature. And these have contaminated people's perspective of politicians and politics and the manner in which issues are dealt with. And I think it is hugely important. It's only 5 years since these events occurred. It's hugely important that the true account of these events is out in the public domain, not a fake or false account or a narrative that some opposition politicians or journalists decided was a great deal more exciting.
I get the impression, part of the book, that the battle for succession within Fine Gael played a part of this, and to a degree the current Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was using those events as a vehicle to better himself into the position of ultimately being Taoiseach.
Well, I think the book deals with that narrative. And what the book is essentially about is the importance of truth in public life, and truth matters.
But is that not politics? Is that not what everybody does in politics?
This is the cynical perspective of politics, where it's becoming more and more acceptable.
But you portray yourself as the good guy, and the good guys don't always win. It can be that there can be ways to manipulate things.
I think people have to make judgments. I think there are certain basic values and principles that's hugely important that democratic countries such as Ireland and Europe adhere to. People have fought.
But if you're on the right side of it, would you have written the book?
No. Well, you see, had the truth been taken seriously, the book wouldn't have been necessary. I found myself in a very strange position. I think somewhere in the book I refer to it as I'd entered a parallel universe where I knew there were issues of controversy that arose. I knew I was telling the truth about those issues, and I knew that there were various facts that were that I attempted to put in the public domain that, because they didn't suit the favoured narrative of some politicians and they didn't suit the favoured narrative of some journalist, never got widespread knowledge. So I believed it's really important, firstly, that we regard truth as matters. We're in a very difficult
era. Did you ever let something go in your ministerial career that you knew was not fully the truth, had a little relationship with it? So
No. I mean, I think you had
the highest integrity in everything.
No, people can make mistakes. Everyone in the world makes mistakes. I make mistakes. Other people make mistakes. You may say something believing it to be true, and it turns out it isn't because you've been misled about some issue or there's some fact you don't know. I've never deliberately told an untruth about any issue. And I think it's terribly important and this goes way beyond me. I think it's terribly important in this republic that no member of the Dáil, democratically elected, appointed as a minister with a reforming agenda, can be hounded out of office by false allegations that the general public in good faith ultimately believe in, because facts are covered up, inconvenient conclusions, commissions of inquiry or commissions of investigation, I should say, are given very little public prominence because they don't suit the false narrative or the fake narrative people have previously advocated. But look, the book is about more than this. What the book tries to do, and I hope people find it interesting read, tries to challenge the way in which we do politics. It challenges the manner in which journalists report politics. It raises serious issues about the relationship between journalism and politics in Ireland, and tries to make the case, and I hope I do make the case, that there are certain principles and values that are important not just within the general political sphere, but they're important within the Fine Gael party.
And do you think people will read that and say, right, Alan Chatter is absolutely right, we're going to change our ways and things, Or will they look at you and have an impression of you making the case, and they say, well, you know, we mightn't have liked him anyway, or we might have thought this of him, or, you know, sure, there he is, he's only trying to change the record or something.
No,
do you think it'll fundamentally change people's attitudes?
I don't know, but I do think facts matter. I think we live in an era in which fiction is given often greater credibility than fact. Opinions and beliefs are given greater credibility than the truth that about particular issues. I hope people who follow those events, and even those who have a view that may be negative about me, and who would like to know what actually occurred, what information were they not told, what did they not know, what conclusions of commissioners of investigation were given very little media coverage because they were perceived to be inconvenient to prior narratives. I hope people who are interested in those events, interested in the integrity of our political system, in the integrity of political parties, in the importance of people when on their feet in the Doyle, telling the truth, not misleading, the importance of politicians not opportunistically using a serious issue simply for their own political benefit
and making
exaggerated claims. Well, there's a story and issues about the Taoiseach.
Do you think he used the vehicle of those controversies himself? It happened to involve you.
Absolutely no doubt that, and the book details this, that around one particular issue, when he knew what he was saying to be untrue, he made claims that at the time fitted the popular narrative and were guaranteed to get him.
And he influenced Enda Kenny?
And I don't know the extent, if any, to which the manner in which he dealt with a particular issue influenced Enda Kenny. I let people make their own mind. People who read the book are going to discover a lot of information they don't know. It isn't my opinion. It isn't based on my belief. It's based on solid fact contained in documents, letters, engagements that occurred at that time. And I hope readers find it an interesting read. It's not all serious. There's some, amidst all the excitement and the frenzy that occurred at the time, there's some odd and funny incidents that happened at the time as well. And I try to bring that into the narrative and bring people really inside the relationships that occur within government.
And could I ask you, Alan, and it sounds personal, but it's not really personal. Were you liked, do you think?
I had a lot of support within the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party, and I have a lot of good friends still throughout the Fine Gael Party in the country. And I'm hoping, for example, we're down in Wicklow today, and there's many a time I'd have visited Wicklow as a Fine Gael front bench spokesperson, or went to meetings in parts of Wicklow, or indeed met many Fine Gael Wicklow members at Ard Eisne. And I think this book will bring to them a new insight, not just of those events, but about issues relating to the Fine Gael Party and the fact that on occasions we lose sight of values and principles that are important. And
so ultimately, it is a real question to say, where did you only discover this about Fine Gael from 2013 onwards?
No, I
joined. Was Fine Gael different before 2013?
I think events occurred around these issues which brought a different perspective to some people in high positions in Fine Gael, or gave me a different perspective. When I joined Fine Gael many years ago, I was a young man, I joined Fine Gael because I saw it as the party of decency, party which respected the rule of law. And what I learned in my experience as subsequent to publication of the Geirin report, that it was a party that had lost interest in the rule of law, and decency was no longer a value that anyone attached any priority to.
Can I just ask you, people have described you sometimes as arrogant.
Well, the people who have described me as that, and that was something that emerged around the time of these controversies, primarily were opposition journalists, I should say opposition politicians and journalists, who didn't appreciate the fact that I was questioning the narratives that they were advocating. And I find myself in the strange position, not only where when I said something that was true and I tried to correct false allegations that were being made, because I was setting facts out about these issues, I was then accused of being arrogant, apparently both defending myself and correcting other people's mistakes is a sign of arrogance. And if that's a sign of arrogance, I make no excuse for trying to stick to the truth. I don't believe, and I say this in the book, I don't believe that there's a single public servant in the Departments of Justice or Defence with whom I engaged in my over 3 years as a cabinet minister who would remotely regard me as being arrogant. And indeed, there's many a story you hear about ministers, both past and present, in which I don't think they would necessarily make that claim about their departmental public servants on the airwaves for fear of being contradicted.
Right, if I had two books in front of me, Alan Chatter, and one of them was all about this and the other one was about Colette James, which one should I actually believe?
Oh, I think you should read both books. I think reading books is a wonderful way of filling your time. It's a wonderful way of being on occasions entertained and taken into other areas of life beyond those you're working or living in. And again, I just hope people see this book as a positive contribution to politics. And it's a challenge. The book is a challenge to current journalists and those of that time who are still in journalism and to opposition politicians to not make allegations against individuals that are unsubstantiated, to check their sources when sources come forward with allegations. And it's a challenge about saying to people, there are certain basic values and principles, one being honesty and the other being truth, and the third being no one should be condemned without due process and a hearing. These are vital and important principles if this state is going to continue to maintain its reputation as a constitutional democracy.
One last question. The state of one of your previous roles, defence, and we hear about a lot of criticism over the last week or so by a member of the Defence Forces. We hear about the comparison in pay for the Trump visit between Gardaí and the Army, and we hear all that. I mean, that was probably there under your watch too. So what would you have to say about conditions in the Army for our soldiers?
No, I have huge concerns about this. A very well-respected member of the Defence Forces, Commandant Cathal Berry, resigned recently. I know he was an individual who was dedicated to the Defence Forces. He could have been earning a great deal more money as a medical doctor outside the Defence Forces than he was earning within them. I fought a huge battle as Minister of Defence when I got into government in 2011. We'd had the Troika here, we'd had the economic collapse, we had the Troika's conditions, which required us to reduce public spending. And I learned when I came into government that one of the demands of the Troika was that the Defence Forces be reduced from 9,500 to 7,500. And I resisted that because I believed if our Defence Forces, who are absolutely fantastic in the manner in which they do their duties, that if the Navy, the Army and the Air Corps were to be able to meet all of their domestic obligations and engage in UN duties, I believed as a minimum we needed to maintain the strength of the numbers.
Do we need to award them better pay?
Yeah, at 9,500. So my problem at that time was we were supposed to reduce
the numbers. But do we need to change the pay structure?
Yeah, and what happened at the time was the pay structure, didn't advance, and in order to recruit, because we needed to keep on recruiting, the new recruits coming in were put on a lower pay. Now, it was always envisaged that both the pay and the allowances, when we got into better economic times, would be improved. I managed to maintain the strength of the Defence Forces well over the 9,000 mark throughout the economic crisis that we had. If the numbers have now descended below 8,500. Commandant Berry was absolutely right in sounding the alarm about this. We have serious issues around the fall of numbers. There's a need to urgently increase salary. There's a need to urgently increase allowances. I believe this should have happened 2 years ago. I don't know why the government haven't addressed this issue earlier. It's quite unacceptable that members of the Defence Forces, the vast majority of whom who joined for idealistic reasons, are finding themselves unable to meet family expense on the salary they're saving.
And I've got to leave it there on time.
Too many are in receipt of social welfare. So I would hope something urgently is done about this, because I believe the numbers within the Defence Forces have sunk below what is enables them
a safe level. Alan Chatter, the book. The book is Frenzy and Betrayal: The Anatomy of a Political Assassination. Alan Chatter, thanks for your wide-ranging views this morning. Thanks for coming out to us. It's the Morning Show Discuss.